NHL Draft on WGR is being brought to you by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Fiegel Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys. And by Dash's Market, serving Western New York for over 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods.
.07 is the time. We welcome you back here. Our continuing coverage of the NHL Draft on WGR, brought to you by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Fiegel Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys, and by Dash's Market, serving Western New York for over 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods. We're live here in the press box. Brian Colziel, Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, Brayton Wilson, Joe Calley down on the floor. He just spoke with the Sabres' second pick of the night. That was taken at pick 20, Ilya Morozov. We'll hear from him coming up here in just a few moments. We also, of course, earlier heard from Daxon Rudolph. You heard from Jarmo Kekalainen. All that coming up here in just one moment. Brayton, let's get caught up here on some of the picks since Morozov went at pick 20. Linsanity coming back.
Oh, Brian.
It's San Jose,
Brian.
Obviously.
Oh, man.
Sorry. Ryan Lynn, defenseman at pick 21,
yes.
Going to the Sharks. 22, the Penguins, Liam Ruck, a right winger. And just on the board right now here, Jeffrey Hurlbut, a left winger at pick 23,
yes,
to Detroit. So any comments on those last three?
Ryan Lynn, good puck-moving, another puck-moving defenseman, mobile defenseman. A little bit on the smaller side, which is, I think, why he kind of moved down the board a little bit. Liam Ruck is one of the twins, the Ruck twins. Mm-hmm. And so it was interesting to see that Pittsburgh took him 22nd overall. He's more so the goal scorer compared to his brother, who's the playmaker and the setup man. They both played on a line together, just in case you didn't know that. So I was thinking, there's a trade happening with Utah trading away the pick at 23. Thought it was going to go to Pittsburgh. No, it goes to Detroit. Detroit trades former first-round goaltender Sebastian Kosa to the Mammoth, and the Mammoth give up the 23rd overall pick, which they just recently acquired in a trade with the Boston Bruins for J.J. Paterka, and the Red Wings select J.P. Hurlbut from Kamloops. Hurlbut finished as one of the top scorers in the Western Hockey League this year. Hurlbut is a Texas native as well, so he went up to the Western Hockey League, played really well, and is off to college next year. Hold on, I have that information. He is going to be going to, I believe, Brian, do you have it there? I saw you had his elite prospect page up, I think, but
hold on.
So he's going to go play his freshman year at the University of Michigan. There we go.
There
we
go. Okay. There we go.
Apologies.
No problem.
You got it.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to hear from Ilya Morozov here coming up, but let's just comment on what we heard from Jarmo Kekalainen. I thought the most interesting thing there was his last thing when asking about the, you know, trade and their lack thereof. Says there were a ton of calls about pick four. It would have taken a significant offer to move off of four. Said they got a few offers to slide back a little bit. They've been talking about it for days, but no outright trade for four would have happened without an impact player with term. He even used that word as well. It wasn't going to even just be somebody that maybe had 1 year left or was coming in, obviously, maybe with their contract expiring in a few days coming up on July 1st, Zach.
I really appreciate Kekalainen. Like, the more we're hearing him speak, the more I think many of us are realizing you don't have to pick through his words. You don't have to look at the body language on a video to like try to like figure out what he's saying. He tells you exactly how it is. Like, it would have taken a huge offer for four. It would have had to have been a young guy with term, which I think also, you know, to me kind of points to, as Brian, you stoutly pointed out, Merchenko, maybe not. Jason Robertson, maybe not.
Right.
These are guys that you were going to have to pay. You know, for Robinson, maybe it's $14 million a year. Merchenko, we've been talking about it earlier in the draft, maybe $11 million per year. And I also like, too, he outright like kind of confirmed some of the reports from this morning. The teams, I mean, he doesn't outright say them, but teams like Calgary were trying to jump up a few spots, and he mentions that the teams were looking to come up a few spots. I do like that they sort of had a price that they were not willing to go past, and it should be said, as much as I am disappointed that they don't get a replacement for Tuck tonight, the prospect pool is still there. It is still very attractive. I mentioned it the moment Daxon Rudolph was taken. I don't really know where Roddy Mirka fits into this. ultimately the GM and Jarmo Kekalainen did actually trade him away at the deadline. It's just not a, it's not a confirmed trade, or it's not an accepted trade in terms of the player, Colton Parayko. There is still plenty here. And it should be noted, too, pretty much all of the names, the big names that are out there, sort of, I guess, if you want to call it on the trade block, or just out there in rumors, all of them but Mason McTavish are still available. He's the only one moved tonight.
Yeah, that's right. He was traded from Anaheim to St. Louis for two first-rounders, pick 15 and 29.
Yeah, so it kind of shows you, like, most of the trade bait list that you would see on that sort of thing, everyone's still hanging around, which means that the Sabres still have plenty of work that they can get done, especially with the fact that you still have a loaded prospect pool now that is reloaded. And
right, you've now added two more first-round picks into there.
I also don't mind having to say the fact that, like, you have a prospect pool reloaded on a team that won the Atlantic Division and had 109 points. Can you replace Tuck's point production in the aggregate? Possibly.
Could.
You could. It's more realistic than replacing Byram's through the system.
Well,
and that's what they did to take care of it with Zellweger today.
Is it replacement by quantity in the sense that Austlin becomes an 82-game player, Kulik comes back as a 82-game player, and Helenius is a part of being a season for 82 games? It's just essentially those three collectively, they might be thinking, we don't have to rush out and overpay somebody to replace Tuck, because amongst those three, we're going to get the goal production and maybe even more.
Well, furthermore, I remember saying, like, Zach Benson first-line minutes would also help quantify that a little bit more. You're not only just getting the kids into 82-game seasons, it's Zach Benson now kind of having more of a set role.
I also want to bring up Jiří Kulík. Jarmo Kekalainen, after the Bo Byram trade, made sure to bring up Kekalainen. His name was first in terms of those young players. Lindy Ruff himself also brought up Kulík and how they kind of envisioned him as their number one center to start this year, that they thought that was maybe his path. Kulík is maybe the most interesting prospect they have. And disappointingly, frustratingly for him, I would imagine as well, the blood clots kind of stop his development in the road. Now, it seems like he is on the right path and to being healthy.
Yeah.
But he was probably their best young player to start this year, and we don't see anything happen with that. So that is something to bring up too, that they probably think very highly of Kulík. We all just forget about him because in the highlight that was this season, he doesn't get to play a part in it.
Yeah, I mean, he was centering Tage Thompson for a little while there before he ended up obviously going off with the blood clot. So, yeah, I mean, we saw Austlin's presence in the Bruins series so good. He leaves with injuries. Again, who knows? Maybe the Sabres are able to overcome whatever they need to against Montreal at some point if Austlin's still playing. Lindy Ruff's move to put Helenius in, we thought, hey, was that going to work out, putting a guy in still as a teenager? That obviously worked out tremendously well. So, I mean, Lindy seems to maybe have a good pulse and an idea of what these three guys can all bring, and I'm sure Jarmo Kekalainen is banking on that too here in terms of thinking, like, I want to react, but I don't want to overreact to the point that I make a move that's not smart, whether it's for the immediate or the long term or the cap or anything, knowing I've got three of these guys. And even if all three don't perform maybe incredibly well instantly, even just one or two of the three is probably all you need at that point. I mean, any of the three, if you said, you know, would all three at least get to 20 goals? And I could say yes. I think that could be. If they play regularly, I think that could happen.
Yeah, and the other thing about it, I'm easier to please in this sort of thing where, like, I was already happy walking to the arena. I was happy when I was getting lunch downtown and the Sabres traded for Zellweger and it cost them a second and Anton Wahlberg. You paid relatively next to nothing to get a Byram replacement to refill your superpower, because the team did have stretches where Tuck was silent this season, and they still went and got 109 points. They had a series going seven games with Tuck getting 0 points, and they were a knuckle puck away from moving on to the conference final. Or a missed goal call, as one brought up painfully. You didn't need to do that to yourself, to any of us. You didn't need to do that. Don't self-torment anyone. It's okay. But the point of it being, they've survived Alex Tuck having cold stretches. They can survive if the kids have to replace Tuck, fine. it was you could not get away with the weekend not filling either the Tuck or Byram hole. They got one of them done in the first day, and let's see what happens the rest of this weekend, because we all know, day two, there's plenty of things that still happen.
And I kind of wanted to, you know, finish my thoughts on that, too, is mm-hmm. None of the names that were really connected to the Sabres are I would be in a much more sour mood. I'd be in a if all of a sudden, you know, Jason Robertson goes to Ottawa tonight, Matthew Nyes like goes to whoever, Philadelphia tonight, and you're sitting there going, what's Yarmo doing? Why are these moves not? Those guys haven't been moved. They're still on their teams.
That's correct.
I still go back to David Pignota right before the draft happened, that maybe something happened between Dallas and Jason Robertson where all of a sudden they were now listening to offers maybe more aggressively than before. And Derek has also brought up as well, RFAs, offer sheets. It has been a thing that has surrounded Robertson's name really for the last couple of weeks of that might really happen because Dallas just may run out of time and he is ultimately treating himself like almost like a UFA already. It may come down to it. There's plenty of names out there, and with the Sabres, it is almost a positive for them that the first round is wrapping up. There's only a few teams that have as attractive of a young prospect pool as they do. Like, it's teams like Montreal.
Yeah.
And then it kind of stops, at least in the Eastern Conference.
To me, the loss of Tuck maybe is more symbolism than it is even in total production. You have an all-star caliber player who's scored over 30 goals for two consecutive seasons, who for many years was probably the only player in the league that I'll say was playing at an all-star level that vocally said, I want to be a Buffalo Sabre.
Right. Yes.
Even Tage Thompson and Rasmus Dahlin, who even though they knew they were here and probably stuck here because of the extension that they had, how many players that were legitimately, you know, 30-plus goal scorers, all-star level players that said, I want to be a Buffalo Sabre? Well, for years, we have been talking about anybody that would fit that description had Buffalo on their no-trade list. Kevin Adams talking about how he couldn't get anybody to sign here for a variety of reasons.
Taxes, palm trees.
Right. Trying to make trades. We even, you know, had one there, you know, where they were maybe thinking Natchez was in a deal and they couldn't get it done because he didn't want to come. Like, all these sort of things that we had. Alex Tuck was waving his hands over here. I want to be the guy that plays for the Sabres. I've dreamed of playing for the Sabres. I've always dreamed about wearing this logo and this sweater, and I want to be the guy that helps fix and get them back to the playoffs. Well, he ultimately did have a big piece in helping that. And I thought him leaving at the end of the season was going to be symbolically tough to take in the sense, like, man, you had a guy that actually wanted to be a Buffalo Sabre. Now, I'll fast forward. Lindy Ruff, his final words after the Game 7 loss, they talked about, like, just, hey, you know, what maybe are you proud of about this thing? And he's like, well, when I got here 2 years ago, I wanted people to say I like being a Buffalo Sabre. And he's like, I feel like maybe now the players on this team do. And guess what? Maybe now more around the league have the same thought
and we
that
did
Alex
that from,
Tuck did.
And so we heard that from Yarmo already.
Yeah, maybe it's not just Alex Tuck that wants to be a Buffalo Sabre. So
it's that he needed to do that in order to, you know, help people believe it through the period they were going through.
Yeah.
You know, to hear that from a player when they're still going through a playoff drought, it was what they needed at the time. You needed to hear a player that was producing at a high level to say, I want to be here. And now they're set up enough that it's okay for him to leave. And you say the symbolism part of it. It's also a symbolism of the team evolving. And Vegas getting booed heavily now.
It's evolving to the sense that
as they're up.
Him leaving maybe isn't as devastating as it would have been had they not broken the drought, had they not had a very successful division championship season, multiple rounds in the postseason, and also saw great things from the three we even mentioned, Auslan, Kulik, Helenius, the arrival of Doan, the rise of Benson, all these sort of things here that maybe make the forward group look a lot better than maybe we think that maybe it, while again, I feel like there can be some really bad symbolism in him leaving. On paper, they can probably maybe find a way to get away with it.
The last 2 months, I think, really set the stage for it. I think fans became comfortable with the idea of Tuck leaving. I mean, before the playoffs started, you had people probably were saying, that like, no, pay him $12 million. That's fine. Like, we need him. And then you have, I've equated it to Brian. Like anytime the Sabres needed a lever pulled to get something out of the playoffs, to get something out of a game, it's the young guys that did it. We only see Austin for three games, and yet when he comes in that Boston series, he's instrumental in them winning in Game 3 in Boston, and he's instrumental in getting Benson and Doan going. They're also part of these young guys. And then Helenius, when he comes up, I mean, goodness gracious, he probably should have had four goals in that Montreal series alone. I mean, just was an absolute workhorse for them. And then he goes on to the World Championships, and what did you know? He scores the golden goal.
And he has a point of game.
And he has a point of game. And so it's just, I think the last 2 months, a month and a half, if you want to say it like that, it just really sort of pushed, I think, even further. I've even said it too. Montreal, I think, you know, if you ask the average fan, like, they had the most attractive prospect pool. Their young talent was coming. They were going to attack everybody. I think Buffalo, in the last little bit of the season, pushed themselves into that conversation as well, because you're looking at a bunch of these guys under 23 years old and going, no, they're for real. That's a lot of talent that is already coming up on an already young team, as they were.
Yeah, and the last thing on talk with this is because the team is able to evolve, because they do break through with him there, it is the fact that they can now survive, not just the production, because, again, as I mentioned, they go through a seven-game series, a back-and-forth affair with the Montreal Canadiens, and it is a knuckle-puck shot that keeps them out of it. With Tuck getting 0 points, they evolved past needing him on the score sheet, and they've also evolved from needing somebody to stand up and say, I'm proud to be here as a Buffalo Sabre. That's the part where
I think you can evolve. I think you saw that in the sense that Josh Doan and Zach Benson saying, I'll sign for seven more years of this.
Absolutely.
I mean, to me, you have like the established core leaders with Dahlin and Thompson. I feel like the next tier now is laid with Benson and Doan.
Agreed.
And with Tuck saying what he said in the past, it allows for Dahlin and Thompson to publicly say, no, we wanted to be part of the solution.
Yeah.
We wanted to stick around, tough it out, and we get mad at each other sometimes, but we want to be the people that solve the problem. We want to be the people that break through. It allows for, like I said, the evolution.
Yeah, I agree. So Tuck off to Washington. Before we go to break here, Brayton, we've had a couple of picks here being made. Pick 24, Vancouver. Pick 25, Ottawa. And now Vegas is on the clock. I want to go through those last couple picks for us.
Get
everybody up to date.
Yeah, Vancouver takes Adam Novotny, who I had the Sabres projected to take 20th overall in my mock draft. Winger out of Peterborough in the Ontario Hockey League. Ottawa goes off the board, which is no surprise to anyone nowadays.
Did they take someone that wasn't on the couch?
They took someone who wasn't even here.
Okay. I do wonder that, like, with the couches thing.
Uh-huh.
What happens when someone goes off script and, like, you have to pull him from the stands instead of the couch?
That happened earlier with Alexander Command.
Okay.
He had to come from the stands.
Trade alert.
We got a trade alert now. But the guy that the Senators took, Jonas Lagerberg-Hohen, is a right winger from Leksands in Sweden, their junior program. Was ranked by Elite Prospects as the 77th best prospect. So that's pretty much that's all I have on him, because I did not even know that he was a prospect that was even thought of as a first round.
Isn't that the best?
Oh, no.
Isn't that the best?
There's always one.
Oh yeah.
There's always one in every draft of any sport.
And the Senators always seem to be the team that makes that selection.
I feel like every league has those teams. Like in the NFL, it's the Raiders. Whenever the Raiders are up, you're like, this might absolutely floor
Alex
everybody.
Alex Leatherwood back in, 2020, 2021?
I think of Cleveland Farrell, number four overall. Mike Mayock, when he was
Farrell
the GM.
Was like, he was known as a
late first rounder,
not number four overall.
Never forget, baby.
Yep. Right. All right.
Montreal's now on the board.
Yeah, Montreal has moved into pick 26 with Vegas, so we're getting toward the end here, round one. Montreal 26, Philadelphia 27, Vegas has now moved back 28, Anaheim 29, Calgary 30, Carolina 31, and then Ottawa at 32. All right, when we come back, we'll take a break here. We're going to hear Joe Calley down to the floor, Ilya Morozov just speaking, the Sabres' second pick of the night at 20th overall, the center. We'll hear from him next. By the way, Morozov from Miami of Ohio, we didn't get a chance to talk about this and get the answer.
The trivia answer.
We said there was one other player that was drafted in the first round out of Miami University, and he had a Sabres connection.
Can't believe this.
25th overall in the first round, 1993, out of Miami University, and his name is
Kevin Adams.
Kevin Adams.
Yikes.
All right. We'll leave you with that
Clarence
thought.
Clarence native, by the way.
That's right.
He didn't
yes.
know.
Timeout from the KeyBank Center and the NHL Draft. Joe Kelly, Paul Hamilton, TJ Luckman, Brayton Wilson, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. I'm Brian Colziel. We'll hear from Ilya Morozov when we return here live to the draft from downtown Buffalo on WGR.
Of the NHL Draft on WGR is being brought to you by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Fiegel Carr and Joyce, your border attorneys, and by Dash's Market, serving Western New York for over.
We welcome you back here to KeyBank Center. Brian Colziel, Brayton Wilson, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly down on the floor, Paul Hamilton in Orchard Park. We'll check in with Paul in just a few moments, get his thoughts on what Jarmo Kekäläinen had to say. But Joe Kelly down on the floor just met up with the Sabres' second pick of the night, 20th overall, the center out of Miami University. Here's Ilya Morozov talking to Joe and the rest of the media.
Ilya, congratulations. I'm sure you've had dreams about getting drafted, putting that jersey on. Now that you're experiencing it, how does it feel?
That's an amazing feeling that I was waiting for that for a long time, and I'm really happy with that. I'm really happy to join the Sabres organization.
Ilya, congratulations. You began this season as the youngest player in college hockey. You finish as a first-round draft choice. You told me at the combine that the Sabres were a team that are interested in you. They traded up, and you know, how does it feel to be a Buffalo Sabre?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good feeling. I believe this program got a really bright future. I'm so excited to join this program as soon as possible.
Left side, second row.
Congratulations. Are you going to be able to maintain that Duolingo streak now that you've been drafted?
Yeah. I just do it for fun. I enjoy it, and I'll just keep it going.
Right side, second row.
Noah Randall, WSBU. First of all, congratulations. Second of all, how do you plan on building chemistry with some of your line mates as you make your way to the NHL?
Can you say it again, please?
How do you plan on building chemistry once you are called up to the Buffalo Sabres? How do you plan on building chemistry with your line mates, both on and off the ice?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, build the chemistry off the ice. You go with the line mates, hang out, build a good connection, friendship. And then you just started kind of implemented on EAs.
In that same row.
Congrats on getting drafted. Obviously, with the way Buffalo played their season, getting the second round of the playoffs, you see the young core getting involved and being now a part of that young core. You know, how does that get you excited knowing that you could be a part of this young core and future here in Buffalo?
Yeah, it gets me really excited. I believe this program got a bright future, and I hope I'll help you guys to win a Stanley Cup in a couple of years.
Other questions? Left side, front row.
As you spoke confidently before the draft about the Sabres having interest in you, what were some of the things they told you? You don't have to get too specific, but what did they tell you about what they liked about your game?
I don't really remember what they specifically said, but I remember that they kind of showed the interest in kind of way. Like, I honestly, I don't really remember, but I remember they just told me that they really like me, and if they have a chance to get me, they will.
Right side, front row.
Emily Benelli, inside the rink. What has been the most surprising part of this process to you?
That took a while. I thought that would go a little faster.
All right, Angelo Restivo here with WSBU The Buzz. What exactly excites you the most about being with the Sabres?
I mean, I saw how wild the fans are, and I'm excited just to play in this building, to feel this atmosphere of hockey. I think that's going to be unbelievable.
Thank you, Ilya.
All right, that is Ilya Morozov, the center, Miami University. Again, the second ever player taken to the first round from Miami of Ohio. The other? No, that was Kevin Adams back in 1993 by the Boston Bruins. Ironically enough, Adams now back with the Bruins. He'll be a part of their front office. And one of the biggest trades of the night, J.J. Paterka going from Utah to Boston for a pair of first-round draft picks. No trades
for the Sabres. We're going to talk to Paul Hamilton here in just one moment to get his thoughts on that. All right, we do have Paul. All right, Paul, back out in Orchard Park. We just heard from Jarmo Kekäläinen here just a few minutes ago, and obviously I know Saber fans on a night like tonight when Jarmo Kekäläinen says, hey, we're open for business. Both the 4 and the 20 are in play, but ultimately at the end of the night, no trades. So you got to separate from the players that they took versus maybe fans' excitement on maybe what trades that ultimately didn't work out here. What did you make of Jarmo's explanations about the fact that maybe there wasn't a trade made either with pick 4 or pick 20?
Well, I think we all know him well enough that if there was anything, you know, he would have absolutely done it, because I think that's what he wanted to do. Elliot Friedman said that Hellebuck waived his no trade to Buffalo, but they couldn't come to an agreement. You know, Jarmo and the Winnipeg Jets. What were the Winnipeg Jets asking for? Obviously too much. And I'm sure it would have involved the number 4 pick, which I would not do. So as far as I'm concerned, the Sabres did the right thing. I wouldn't do it for the number 4 pick and nothing else. And I'm sure the Jets were asking for a lot more than that. And Kekäläinen did not feel it was worth it. So he didn't do it, nor did he feel any other deals were worth it, so he felt it was better to go on and make the picks.
Paul, it felt like, you know, speaking on Hellebuck, I did not know that either, that Elliot Friedman had said Hellebuck had waived his no move or no trade for Buffalo. There were reports today, though, that what maybe was a hang-up there is Winnipeg didn't want to give up the 8th overall pick as well, and I think that goes to what Jarmo was talking about. And Paul, we were talking about it a little while ago. I really do appreciate that with Jarmo Kekäläinen, and you don't have to read between the tea leaves. Like, he kind of just gives it frank to you. Jarmo wanted a young player with term. They wanted to get their, you know, socks blown off, essentially, by an offer. And I will say this, too. You know, and I personally do feel this way. I'm a little disappointed they have not been able to find the replacement for Alex Tuch tonight. However, excluding J.J. Paterka, because I imagine he was not on the Sabres, you know, idea for a forward acquisition, Mason McTavish is the only name that's moved. I right. But Mason McTavish is the only name moved. Like, that, you know, Nyes, Robertson, right? If you want him, Robert Thomas. Like, all of these names are still out there.
It seemed like all the way along here, just, you know, for the past, how much everything was too much. I mean, everybody was asking too much for everything. And, you know, who knows if Detroit was willing to move to Brinkett. But, again, you're talking about a guy who's 1 year before free agency. How, you know, what's Detroit looking for him if they made him available? And it just seems like, you're right, nothing was really done. And the overpayment Boston did for Paterka, that trade shouldn't have been done either. I mean, just don't get it. I don't understand it. I wouldn't give one number one pick for J.J. Paterka yet, too. And I'm shocked, because Kevin Adams is now a member of the Boston Bruins organization, and Kevin Adams and J.J. Paterka do not see eye to eye. He was not happy with what J.J. Paterka pulled with the Sabres. And so I'm kind of surprised he didn't talk the Bruins out of it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I did want to get your thoughts on this, because, I mean, you're bringing up the, you know, kind of the price points. It felt like everything was so exaggerated. Everyone was asking for so much. You almost wonder, I mean, we're all loving it at the time, the Bo Byram trade, the value, you just couldn't say no. Did that almost turn everyone into overdrive, or like the number 4 overall pick almost became toxic in a sense for the Sabres to try to trade, because everyone was going to, you know, now in a sense almost undervalue the 4th overall pick and just try diligently to try to go get it, because the Byram trade is ultimately such a win for the Sabres.
And did Kekäläinen try to go from 4 to 8 with the Jets? You know, and then get Hellebuck out of it, and then maybe do prospects. Or maybe McLeod in prospects, or, you know, I just threw a name in there. It doesn't really matter what name you name X from the roster in prospects. You know, he probably wanted to stay in that first round if he possibly could, but he just wasn't going to, go to that. And, you know, I think he has shown us that, you know, he wants to be aggressive, but he's not going to be stupid either. And he's not going to be the Boston Bruins. And, you know, so it's like, well, hey, if you think you're going to fleece me, I have been in this league. I know what I'm doing. And so, you know, and just because they made the picks doesn't mean the pick still can't be traded, but now it's locked in. Now teams right. know, all right, this was the fourth overall pick. This is the guy we're getting. We don't have a choice now. And so you got to hope the other team that you're trying to deal with likes the guy you took. And they probably should, because if I'm being honest with you, Jerry Fortin is very good at this with
I
drafting.
Agree. Yep.
I mean, you know, look at some of the guys that are here. Some of the guys – the only thing that hasn't worked out real well for him was drafting those Russians. That hasn't seemed to really worked out for him yet, at least. Other than that, I mean, he is pretty dead on when it comes to his board as far as how it works out. He, you know, he's within a pick or two, usually with the board, what the board is. And, you know, he knew at 20 what they wanted, and they got it. But they knew they weren't going to get it at 27. You don't know for sure, but they didn't feel they were going to be able to get that at 27. So that was one of the reasons, many reasons, why Kesselring was traded, and they got their guy. And Jerry was right. And it was interesting what Yarmo said, which I didn't know. He kind of stays out of it. He does scout players, both personally and on tape. But he said, this is what these guys do. They're watching these players all the time. He goes, they're watching them a lot more than I am. So I try to stay out of it. He goes, if I have an opinion on a player, I will give it. But he said, sometimes I won't give a strong opinion, you know, because he goes, Jerry and his staff know what they're doing. He goes, he trusts them. And he was around Jerry. He wasn't the GM last year, but he was around for the draft. He knows how Jerry operates. And Jerry Fortin still wouldn't have this job if he wasn't good at it, because he's gone through three general managers, and that almost never happens.
Right,
usually
absolutely.
GMs clear house, and that Jerry Fortin has survived through three GMs. So I think that tells you right there what kind of job he does.
That's a case of longevity there, Paul. One of the more interesting things that I picked out of Yarmo's words today, believing that newly acquired Olin Zellweger and Crevier will compete to play next to Owen Power. Two very different styles. I mean, Crevier, the 6'8 defenseman acquired from Chicago, and then Zellweger, more of a fleet-footed, puck-moving defenseman. It's interesting, though, to know, like, they made sure they wanted to take care of the Bowen Byram thing and the vacancy that's left from what was deemed, I think accurately by Bulldog all year, their superpower. Fix the superpower first, and then we can deal with the forward issue accordingly.
Yeah, you know what? I don't really see that happening, only because Zellweger's a lefty, and Lindy Ruff likes lefty-righties. So I see Zellweger playing with Timmins, or either way, if Timmins goes into the top four, which I don't think is a good idea with his turnovers. Crevier did it with Chicago. Now it's because Chicago is weak on defense, so he could jump into there. But he did it well. He played well in the top four. He was solid. So, and he's a righty, so I could see him playing with Power to start with. And then, you know, have the lefty with Zellweger with Timmins. Or, you know, either way, Zellweger with the two new guys together and put Timmins with Power. But I think I know how that would turn into a disaster. I mean, Timmins is very, very good on the penalty kill. Excellent. Five on five, it tends to get into turnovers. Too many turnovers. So that would not be my choice to do. I don't even particularly like him on the third pair on five on five, but I definitely don't want him next to Owen Power. So that's why I think Crevier as a right-handed shot would get it, and then Zellweger as a left-handed shot would play with Timmins.
Paul, one or two more things here with you, and then we'll let you go. Kekalainen also, when talking about the two draft picks, I think the highlight that I'll say that he talked about with Rudolph, he said that his hockey instincts were really, really high. They liked that part of him. And then with talking about Morozov, he said that with talking with the Miami coaching staff and all that sort of stuff, that he said his character was really high. They were really impressed by his work ethic, even learning English so quickly. So he had some nice, I guess you'd say, intangible things to say about both of them beyond even just their hockey skills.
And Morozov's been here since 14. One of the reasons why is he said he wanted to learn English and he wanted to be good at it. He goes, if he's going to be here in North America for 20 years, he wants to be proficient with the language, and he wanted to get over here and do that. And don't forget, he was the youngest player in college hockey playing against guys who were 3, 4, 5 years older than him, because you know, a lot of guys, you know, wind up playing junior before they wind up getting in the college ranks. So, you know, he was the youngest player in college. So if you look at his numbers and say, well, wait a minute here, why did they take this guy? His numbers aren't overwhelming. First of all, he tends to be, from what I read and heard, a good two-way player. And second of all, he's a kid. You know, exactly, playing against men. So I think his numbers probably, when you look at it, probably be more representative as he gets maybe into his second and third year at Miami of Ohio.
Paul, appreciate all your analysis out in Orchard Park. Thank you so much. And obviously always fun to cover the draft. So thanks for being a part of it here night one. I know that Derek will be...
Yeah, I might be back here tomorrow,
Paul. He'll be on. He's hosting round two here, so
well,
be ready for that.
I do know the new guys will probably, or not probably, will be here tomorrow. So,
yep.
You know, and if they are here tomorrow, it's probably going to be before the draft starts. So I just want Derek to be ready for that if he so desires to use that.
Yes, okay. I think we will.
All right. Paul, thanks for your work tonight. Great job as always. Appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
Okay, great. Paul Hamilton out at One Bills Drive, where the Sabres GM, Jarmo Kekäläinen, and his staff out there. Of course, we're here inside KeyBank Center, where the prospects, the families, and Commissioner Gary Bettman making the announcements on the picks. Brayton, before we go to break here, a couple of more picks here from, Montreal, Philly, Anaheim, and Vegas, all going here within the last 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, the picks are coming in a little faster here, as I think I'm sure that they want to
wrap it up. Yep.
Wrap up this evening in fairly short order. Montreal moving up a couple of slots to take Gleb Pugachev out of Russia, right winger, scoring right winger, power forward. 27th overall, the Flyers go defense again, but they draft a lumbering defenseman in Maxim Sokolovsky, a 6'7" behemoth who played in London last year. The Anaheim Ducks moved up one slot to select Marcus Nordmark, a skilled winger out of Sweden in Djurgården. And then recently, with the 29th overall pick, the Vegas Golden Knights selecting Juho Piperainen, a defenseman out of the championship-winning team Tappara in the Finnish Liga, a very solid, mature, two-way right-shot defenseman.
All right. Good job, Brayton, keeping us up to date on all the picks. There's only three to go. Calgary at 30, Carolina 31, Ottawa 32. When we come back, we'll get the last three picks. We'll get our final thoughts. We'll do one more check-in from down on the floor with Joe Calley for Brayton Wilson, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. I'm Brian Colziel. Round one, night one of the draft here, live at KeyBank Center. Our coverage continues on WGR right after this timeout.
Coverage of the NHL Draft on WGR is being brought to you by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Fiegel Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys. And by Dash's Market, serving Western New York for over 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods.
Back at KeyBank Center here live in the press box as we are overlooking the night one, round one, 2026 NHL Draft. Calgary at pick 30 just made their selection. Center Jack Hextall, Brayton. Hextall, a name, of course, we always have heard around the hockey world.
Yes, but no relation to a lot of the Hextalls that we've heard before. Jack Hextall, American-born player, played with Youngstown in the USHL, a very skilled player down the middle. He's going to be another player heading to Michigan State University among the upcoming freshman class. So this another American, very interesting to hear that more Americans are heading to Calgary and heading to Canada after all the pushback with some other interesting U.S.-born players that have requested trades out of Canadian cities.
That's right. All right, so two picks left. Carolina, who, by the way, won the Stanley Cup.
Don't
Yay.
Remind us.
Yep. And then Ottawa at pick 32. Okay, let's go down to the floor. One more final check-in with Joe Calley. Joe, you got a chance to hear from Ilya Morozov. We just played that interview a few minutes ago. What did you make from hearing from him and your thoughts on that pick?
Yeah, I short and sweet with Morozov there, but he, I got to say, just kind of sitting in the room there, taking it all in, he seemed, it's the same thing as Rudolph earlier. He just seemed excited to be a part of the team, and every question, asked, he had a smile on his face, just kind of like I said, juiced up to be a part of the Sabres organization. And I think that's the biggest takeaway for me, is just kind of seeing these guys, you know, the first time in my life, really, as a Sabres fan, that I've seen people excited to get drafted here, excited at the prospect of eventually playing here. So it's kind of, it's a pretty cool thing to see, I guess.
Yeah, what did you make of just seeing all the families and the players' reaction to being drafted, you know, beyond even just the Sabres themselves? I thought it was a really, really nice setup there down on the floor, and the way that they were able to cycle families in from the 100 level down to the couches area, and being able for them to really celebrate that moment when they heard their name called.
Yeah, I mean, it's just getting the front row seat to that is something I personally will never forget. Just seeing the excitement, it's something, and even the agents getting up and running over that are here, and it's a big group thing, you know. It's something that you don't normally see on the TV, and I try to paint the picture as best I can, but everyone's just up, you know, family members crying, all of that, and then they embrace the commissioner up on the stage, and it's a really cool thing to see up front. It's something I never really thought I'd be paying all that much attention to, but I find myself not being able to look away for the moment when the prospects are walking up to the stage.
Yeah, man. If there's anything else there, Joe, you want to add, of maybe, you know, what would people not see on the television coverage that maybe you can tell us? I mean, that you're walking on and off the floor, even going backstage, even into the interview rooms. Like, what else did you maybe take in from the night that people would have not seen on the TV side if that's where they're watching tonight?
Well, I think just if I were to put myself in the draft pick shoes, there's not much time for celebration outside of walking up and, you know, spending the moment with your family like we were just talking about. It's pretty much go, go, go. Like, I just had Rudolph walk past me down here, still making his way around as well. So it's not over for these guys as soon as they get off the stage. It's really just out and about for the rest of the night. So it's pretty interesting. Like, it's, you know, you would think they get to just, you know, go do their meetings and go home and enjoy the time with their families. But they're still here, and they got picked hours ago now. So it's not over yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Joe, great job down on the floor tonight. Oh, go ahead. Yep.
No. One observation from the floor is Vegas is not well-liked for trading back.
I'm sorry. Say it again?
Vegas is not a well-liked hockey team for trading back so much, I'll tell you that. you know, not just I'm sitting down there, and all of a sudden it's just booze, 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 and I'm like, what's happening? And the trade alert comes across, and Vegas is going back again. So, that, I mean, they're the villain, as we say. So it's even more prominent when it's not just one fan base here. There's multiple in the stands going after him. So I guess that's one takeaway from the broader NHL perspective for me.
Joe, great job downstairs tonight. Appreciate it. And we obviously enjoyed hearing the interviews with Rudolph and Morozov, the newest Sabres. Hope you, as you said, you're glad you enjoyed the night. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Can't wait to have more from the arena for me tomorrow, Joe.
All right, Joe Calley covering the draft down on the floor. Good insight. And, the prospects and the guys filling in down there, really, really cool scene. He mentioned Vegas. They, of course, lost in the Stanley Cup final to the team that's on the clock right now, Carolina. How far do you both view the gap between the Sabres, all three of you, and the Hurricanes? That's the team that won the
trade
Cup.
Trade alert.
Oh, we got another trade here. I was wondering what was taking so long.
Yeah,
this
the
last
clock
pick.
Was no longer there.
Well, yes. I mean, so much for getting that answer real quick.
All right, so we got a trade here. But, yeah, how far of a gap are the Sabres away from this team that obviously won the Stanley Cup?
It's tough. I would have told you before the conference finals that I thought it was very close, that you almost wonder, like, is Carolina just going against teams in the Metropolitan, of course, that are maybe not up to snuff? And then they really handled Montreal quite comfortably.
Yeah.
It also felt like, to a certain extent, that this was Carolina's year. I mean, it was one of the more dominant runs we'd seen in the Stanley Cup Finals. I guess the big thing to take away from them, there's not really a super, superstar in their team. Their goaltending, much like the Sabres, is sort of piecemeal together. It's kind of just guys, and you hope they get hot. I don't want to say they're super far away, but sort of going to the point, though, the Sabres did lose Bo Byram and Alex Tuch. So right now, I do think they're a little bit far away, but not as much as maybe I would have thought a couple months ago. I do feel pretty good.
I would agree with the sentiment that they're not that far off. I also suspect it has more to do with the fact that, like Zach said, Carolina has been dealing with the heartbreak of playoff failures after playoff failures for years now, including having before this season a collective one conference final win since 2006 against Buffalo.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, it is something that they seem to power through it. They powered through the majority of the playoffs, actually, losing a grand total of three games, including one where they were off for 2 weeks of hockey. So it just seemed like something where it was a culmination of things to come. And for Carolina, I guess good for them. You know, like there's still going to be a sour patch for many people here in Buffalo, but also actually good for them. They're more of a likable squad than they were back when we've seen the heartbreak in years past. But I don't think the gap is that far. The Sabres also have not just a division-winning team. The cupboard is full again. Mm-hmm. The youth is graduating to the main roster. They're not as far off as we would all like to fear. Just because Carolina handled Montreal does not mean it would have been a one-for-one if Buffalo moved on to the conference final. They could have given them a little bit harder of a time.
All I'll say is we were cheated of the opportunity to see the Sabres and the Hurricanes play in the conference final. And you know, Montreal, I'll say, you know, they played the way they did against Buffalo. They played well. They got the win on a fluke knuckle puck, like you said, Derek, earlier in the broadcast. They go to the Eastern Conference Final. They win game one, seemingly convincingly, and then the next four games is a complete wash because they're just outmatched completely. I think the Sabres could have matched Carolina better. I think they would have put up a better fight against a team that I think they do match up with fairly well. I think Carolina is better. They're a little more deep up front. They're a little more deep on the back end. You know, I just would have really loved to have seen that opportunity to see the Sabres play in the Eastern Conference Final. Whether or not they would have won, I don't know. I was still riding the psychic all the way until the very end. So It was my tweet. I'm not the psychic.
You are the one that reported that one and put it out there into the ether and let that sit for years, as a matter of fact.
It was all tongue-in-cheek when I did it.
I wouldn't even say tongue-in-cheek. You took a phone call.
Yep.
They said those words.
Yep.
And you pinned it to your Twitter for 5 years.
Yeah. Oh, it was 8 years.
8 years.
8 years.
At least 5 years.
Well, I mean, listen, at that time, let's remember, Josh Allen was just drafted by the Bills.
Correct.
Nobody really truly knew what he was.
As a matter of fact, there were articles saying that the Bills would have to beat math itself in order for that pick to work.
And then the Sabres had just drafted Rasmus Dahlin after finishing dead last in the NHL again. Guy called and said
what
that.
What a world 8 years ago is, huh, Brian?
Yeah.
I know. Nashville, by the way, moved into the spot. We spent this time talking about Carolina because they were on the clock. Trade has been announced, and now Carolina picked up an extra draft pick in the second round. But Nashville going with a defenseman here, Brayton, at this selection.
Yes, Tommy Blail, actually a Schenectady native, who ended up playing in the Quebec Maritime Junior Hockey League with Moncton. And he finished as the defenseman of the year there. He was a phenomenal player, good skating, puck-moving defenseman. That's a theme of this draft class, is a lot of good puck-moving skating defensemen who move around the ice really well. So he goes to Moncton, plays really well, is named the Defensive Player of the Year, the Rookie of the Year, and he's, I think, going to be maybe playing one more year in Moncton. Yes, from what I remember, according to the Elite Prospects. Returned to Moncton for one more year before, guess where he's going to play college hockey?
Michigan State.
Michigan State. Another Michigan State commit.
Zach was ready to jump on that one.
This was
part of that group.
This is like it is amazing reading up on some of these prospects, how many of them are going to Michigan State. It's nuts. It's nuts. Where does Michigan State have room on their roster for all of these upcoming players?
They'll figure that out later, right? And that's a future question. That's a future Spartans question. Let them figure that out.
We're past 11 p.m. here. One pick to go for Ottawa, pick 32. As we get to the top of the hour here, pause 10 seconds for station identification. Here you're listening to live coverage of the NHL Draft.
WGR Buffalo, WGR FM HD1 Weathersfield, W284AP Buffalo, and WKSE HD2 Niagara Falls.
Back here live in the press box, downtown Buffalo. One pick to go on night one, round one. Ottawa on the clock with Brayton Wilson, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Joe Calley, Paul Hamilton, TJ Luckman. I'm Brian Colziel. I hope you've enjoyed our coverage all night long. One pick to go. It's Ottawa. We're awaiting that pick here. They've got about a minute left on the clock. The Sabres have made two choices tonight. Fourth overall defenseman Daxon Rudolph and 20th overall center Ilya Morozov. Buffalo will be back on the clock tomorrow along with the rest of the draft. We'll have coverage, Derek, with you starting at 11 a.m.
You know what, Brian? I think because you've been the one being the pivot man here today, I want to ask you now, seeing as how we are coming to the end of the night, the Sabres make these two selections. Overall, what are your feelings on how this night has gone for them? They made a trade before the draft started, but they do also make the selections at 4 and 20. What are your takeaways? What are your thoughts about the evening as a whole?
Yeah, I think you just have to separate the fact that you thought with two draft picks that there may have been some action going on with either of them. And maybe the disappointment that there isn't one, because the Sabres are in win now mode.
Yep.
So while both of these players, I can't sit here and say they were great picks or they were terrible picks, and it would be unfair to say either at this point. But what I think is fair is to say is you are looking to be better next year because you are ready to compete to win a Stanley Cup. And on night one, none of that happened. Now, I think, Zach, your point is excellent. There wasn't a whole bunch of other moves made either. We had a couple here in the J.J. Paterka's trade. We didn't want to deal with that anyway.
Even with Paul, I'm like, I don't think he'd be on their list.
Right. Yeah. He's not on their
Paterka
list
Paterka was on nobody's radar entering tonight. Yeah.
So I think overall, you know, happy that that wasn't involved anyway. Here's the final pick is made here from Ottawa. We'll get it in just one moment. But that probably means there's more to come here, and it doesn't just have to happen on this night. So, you know, you took a defenseman. They got the choice of all the defensemen they wanted. There was four in a row. They obviously liked Rudolph the best here. And Morozov, the center, seemed like, in terms of the high character, intelligence, work ethic, it fits the model of what we're seeing with a lot of the younger Sabre forwards that this team has in their organization.
And I think it's right to separate the draft night itself with the prospects that are selected as opposed to the overall climate that people may have wanted that trade to happen right away. They may have wanted that action to be there right from the outset, especially because they start the afternoon like this. They trade for Zellweger, and it doesn't cost them a whole heck of a lot. But overall, I'm happy with the draft picks themselves, and I'm still happy overall with the night because the defense was my biggest question.
Bulldog kept mentioning it on our flagship in WGR. Mm-hmm.
It's their superpower. If you can restore the superpower, I can deal with, over the course of the weekend and through the introduction of free agency, how do you deal with the Alex Tuch vacancy? You take it one step at a time. And I think the Sabres took care of one of those check marks tonight. And overall, I like the prospects that they end up selecting here.
Jackson Cover, the last pick of the first round, going to Ottawa. And part of what makes this night special, he's got some tears up on the stage.
His fan
and his family really, really excited there.
So
that he's the last pick here, Brayton.
A little cool background for him. 6'1", 185 pounds. Spent last year playing with the London Knights in the Ontario Hockey League. 20 goals, 32 assists in 67 games. He's committed to Penn State University, not next season, but the year afterwards, according to Elite Prospects. He was born in Miami, Florida, but his nationality is Canadian and also Cayman Islands.
Mm.
So,
okay.
Yeah, a little bit of some fun background for him. And he, oh, my God. I look at some of these prospects sometimes, and I know I'm 34, and I'm just like, that kid looks like he's 12. He looks like he's a baby face.
Brayton, it's okay. We're just getting older by the day. It's all right.
I think I just grew five more
gray hairs. Well, every year we get older, and every year these players are still in the 18 years old.
Yeah. The Sabres did take a 17-year-old tonight.
That's right, even younger.
Yeah, so look at that. The Sabres are even trying to buck the trend. But, no, every day we're getting older, Brian. So there's our reality for the evening.
Hello, darkness, my old Now that friend. We are through the first round here tonight, in terms of the presentation within the building, I will say this. I obviously, these last handful dozen years here that we've been covering the draft. I'm only taking it in on the television coverage as we're doing the radio coverage. We know last year that we said there were some bad
setups and logistical moments.
There were some interesting choices last year.
I think they did a very nice job in here in the building tonight. For those that did attend, if you're in your car and you're listening on your way home, I would have to think it was an enjoyable night to be in here. I think in terms of in-house, if you were in here watching it, taking it in, or if you were watching it even on the television side, I think the NHL did a nice job here. We mentioned the couch setup and all the interviews and things like that. I think they did a nice job here. For people that are thinking, hey, should I come down tomorrow? Should I bring some of my kids because it's a chance for them to see it? I would say go for it. I think it's worth coming down.
Yeah, absolutely. And, and it's not like a thing that you have to stay the entire afternoon for.
Right.
You probably come down, stay for the second, third, fourth round, maybe fifth, sixth round. You decide, okay, we've been here enough. Let's go home. Let's enjoy the rest of the day. But this is a really cool setup, and I'm glad the NHL decided to do this time around, because I know for the last few years they've done the Sphere. They've done the Peacock Theater in Los Angeles, where was the 2023 draft? Nashville. I might have been at the arena there. But still, like, this is a cool setup that they needed to do in Buffalo because they didn't have this elaborate place that they could have had it. They could have had it like Shea's Buffalo Theater, but to be able to fit.
That's probably not big enough.
Right, it's not big enough. So they come back to the arena setting, and they make the most out of it. And I think that the NHL did a really good job ensuring that, hey, not only did they kind of bring back the old way, even though it's decentralized, but they give the families of the players a really nice setting to be able to enjoy this moment with their kid that really worked up to this moment to be able to hear their name called on stage. Kudos to the NHL for doing this, and I hope that if they're going to continue to do the decentralized format, they continue to do it in this fashion.
Yep, I would agree.
I do wonder, tomorrow, is the same setup going to be there with all the couches? Because I'm not going to lie to you, off air, Zach and I got giddy when I think it was Calgary. It took a player that was not on one of the couches. And we were like,
there were
it's
three
a Stamps
players.
Player.
I think there were three players tonight that were picked from the stands.
So, so it's kind of like the joke of like at pick 30, Calgary selects you sitting in row 14. Like, I did get a little giddy about that at the end. So I do wonder if this setup remains tomorrow and they rotate the players in and the families in on the couches, or are they just going to be in the stands tomorrow? That's a lot of floor to get that covered. What I do miss though. In lieu of the couches, I wish
all the teams were
there
here
were
again?
32 tables.
Yes,
with general managers at every single one of them, because we would have been frothing.
Yes,
watching at
the Sabre table.
Yes, yep.
Who's walking over there?
Look at Jarmo Kekäläinen and walk over to the Stars table.
Yeah,
is that McCrimmon going to Detroit and Yzerman? Oh no! Like all of a sudden you're thinking, oh my God, Larkin trade is going to happen to Vegas or something like that. Like. We would have been glued. We would have had the binoculars, like everything keyed in on this sort of thing. So I do miss the centralized draft process. But like you said, Brayton, it's a really good presentation for what they were able to do today. There was an awkward moment at the start of the draft.
There's always awkward moments.
I mean, there's always awkward moments, but like, you know, Justin Bieber, the crowd really was not behind that one, I don't think.
And not only that, but he also just stood there and was like, Can I go?
Yeah, there was no clear direction.
Kevin McKenna,
for him.
Get up here. You're
Mr.
the
pit. Mr. McKenna.
Mr. McKenna.
Mr. McKenna.
Zach tweeted it and it was perfect. That was a little awkward.
It's about as awkward as you thought it'd be.
I would agree. Well, let's make a smoother close here to our transition to saying goodnight. Don't forget, tomorrow our coverage will continue at 11 a.m. If you really want to wake up early, Tee to Green's on at 7 a.m.
Brian, you got yourself a tough assignment getting out of here and getting right back at it for Tee to Green. Brayton Wilson and I will be on tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Joe Calley will be reporting from here. Paul Hamilton will be reporting from Orchard Park. And Zach, you will be there at 2 o'clock. So all of us here are involved tomorrow.
You're so confident that this is going to end by 2 o'clock. It's not.
I will
just get ready.
I will
just get
bet
ready.
You the dollar in my pocket, and you have to come in to collect it.
Brian, are you heading to the golf course now and sleeping and staying overnight in a camper or something?
I'm going to head to Glen Oak right now. That's where we are tomorrow.
In the background?
All right, gentlemen. Great job tonight. Want to thank our crew. Joe Calley down on the floor. Paul Hamilton out at Orchard Park. TJ Luckman producing back in our Amherst studios. Brayton Wilson, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, I'm Brian Colziel. Coverage of the NHL Draft on WGR, brought to you by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Fiegel, Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys, and by Dash's Market, serving Western New York for over 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods. We hope you enjoyed our coverage tonight. We'll pick it up tomorrow. From all of us here at WGR, thanks for listening, and we say goodnight from KeyBank Center.